Ray with a cartoon.
D20 Radio, your gamer's role. www.d20radio.com.
You're listening to The Underground Radio, bringing you all of the very best Pokemon news and views this side of Twist Mountain. I'm Nateel.
And I'm Sam. For today's broadcast, we'll be checking in on the voltage meter, spending some time with Delibird, and hanging out on Victory Road, spending some time talking about double battle strategy, and spotlighting the Victory Pokemon. So sit back, relax, and give your Radio Rotome what it wants.
Regionals countdown, 1 week.
1 week.
Oh my god.
I'm starting to feel a little tense about this.
A little pressure. Pressure's building.
Yep, just a little. It'll be awesome when we get there and when we're actually doing all of the things, but the impending wait that we're going to have to do in the last minute, you know, hey, we need to get stuff done things, is getting to be a little intense.
Yeah, I know. I know the feeling.
Yeah.
It's been a little bit ridiculous, and I guess I've been super lucky because I've had, I'm finally starting to get better luck with my breeding, and Josh has been a literal angel helping me breed some of these Pokemon, so.
Yep. He's also going to, I guess he hasn't done it yet, but he's going to be helping me out with breeding too, because as I was looking through my Pokemon boxes, I found that I didn't have one of the Pokemon that I need to breed with. So I thought I did, because I have all of the Pokemon ever, but as it turns out, I don't have this specific one.
Oh no.
So he was going to be lending me one of his Pokemon that has amazing stats from what he showed me on when he sent me a text about it, and he's going to trade that over to me so that I can breed with it. It doesn't have any gender, so I can just stick it in there with a Ditto, and all of a sudden, two outstanding parents, you know, give me all the eggs now, please.
Oh, definitely.
But yeah, it's going to be okay. It'll be awesome.
That'll be good. I got to borrow your Dusknoir to do some of my breeding, and that has gone very, very well for me. I was really happy with that.
Now, was it the right... I forgot to ask this the last time because I didn't even think to check it, but was it the right nature?
No, it wasn't the right nature, but that actually ended up not being a big deal, because the reason I needed to borrow it was because it was male and had the egg move I needed, so it removed one of the steps in breeding for me.
Yeah.
And when I was breeding for the parent that I'd be using with the right nature, like, the first set of eggs, I hatched an outstanding parent.
Nice.
So I was like, well, that'll do.
Yeah, my Dusknoir is a bit of a champ. Just saying. And it was surprising because you gave me collateral in the form of Tesla.
Yep, Tesla's on your cart right now.
I was just like, whoa. I'm just going to put this out there right now. Even though my Dusknoir is a champion and he is awesome, he has amazing IVs, one of the best Pokemon I've ever bred. He is not worth Tesla. you overcompensated me for that one.
Well, you only get to hold on to him until I give Dusknoir back, so.
It's true.
That's pretty much, like, literally, like, my whole story for the week has been breeding for this team, because my focus on regionals is VG only, but you've been vamping up with your TCG deck still too, right?
Yep. I was telling you about this, and then I also talked to Mitch, and I also talked to, well, I can only talk to it for so long to Josh because he doesn't do the TCG anymore. And, you know, of course he was just like, well, you know, that's cool, Sam. And, you know, it was kind of a one-sided conversation. It was mostly me telling him what I was up to. But I've been working on getting a new deck built, actually, and it's just a for fun one. It's a grass type one.
Ooh.
And yeah, the Megalocannon set hasn't come out yet, when grass types will all of a sudden be a righteous terror upon the battlefield. But yeah, this one is kind of interesting. I've picked up a bunch of the Combis and Vespiquen, and I was going to make a deck around those guys, because the just reading the text here on the cards, the Combis have an attack for one grass energy called Sting Missile, and it does 30 damage, and then you shuffle the Pokemon and all cards attached to it into your deck, and the Vespiquen that the Combis evolve into has a one grass energy attack called Gather Order, which allows you to search your deck for as many Combis as you like and put them onto your bench and then shuffle afterwards. And the Vespiquen also has another amazing attack for one grass and one colorless called Damage Beat. And that does 20 damage times the number of damage counters on the defending Pokemon. So the really nice thing about the Combis is that you can stick them out there for one grass energy. They ping somebody for 30, and then they shuffle right back into the deck. They've only got 30 HP, so they're basically out there to be one-shot Pokemon, and then they just disappear. But then the Vespiquen can come back in after the Combis have just finished Sting Missling the opponent, and then Damage Beat for 20, 40, 60 damage, 120 if two Combis have attacked, and if it's weak to grass, that's 240 damage in one turn.
That's pretty intense.
So I'm kind of excited for that one. I haven't decided which other card I want to put in there, though, because the Lavannies from the most recent set, the Plasma Storm, were kind of nice. You know, they were okay, but I also was looking at the Lavannies from, I don't even know what set this is. I'm terrible at the little marks. But it's the Lavanny with the attack Nurturing. For one colorless energy, I get to choose one of my Pokemon, search my deck for a card that evolves from that Pokemon, and put it onto that Pokemon. So as long as I have a Combi and I get the Lavanny out there, I can immediately evolve the Vespiquen and then start switching around however I want.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, so, and I'm sure Megalocannon, when it comes out, I'll be able to check it out a little more closely and see if I can improve anything on this, but right now it's just a solid grass deck, you know, nothing too terribly fancy, it's just something to have for fun sort of thing.
Well, and with all the work you've been putting in on this steel deck of yours, it's probably nice to be thinking about something that isn't, like, tournament crazy stuff.
Yeah. That was starting to get a little intense. I was doing a lot of work on Lackey, despite the fact that I don't have any regular partners to play against. But speaking of the metal deck, though, I was able to trade one of our league goers, Devin, for one of his full art Registeel EXs. So I'm able to now have two full art Registeel EXs in this metal deck, and it didn't serve any purpose except for pure cosmetic purposes.
It made it prettier.
It did make it prettier, and I approve of that. So I don't know. It was a pretty nice trade. I think I traded, what did I trade for it? I traded one of my spare Kabalion EXs and two Jolteons and three Eevees for it.
Nice. That's not a bad deal.
Yeah, he definitely got a little better on it. The Kabalion EX by itself was about $5 more than what the full art Registeel EX was, even though the Kabalion EX wasn't a full art. But still, I was more than willing to trade for that because, I mean, Devin's an awesome person, and I was more than okay with it.
Yeah. You know what else is really pretty?
What's that?
Oh, the Pikachu 3DS XLs. Have we gotten to talk about the fact that we have these in our possession now?
No, we haven't, because on the last time we last time we were talking about them, it was that they were
incoming. Right. They were in transit still.
Yes. So, yes, we both have the Pikachu 3DS XLs, and they are beautiful.
I love it so much.
And I'm just going to say right now, after playing the XL version, I have a really hard time playing on the regular 3DS.
I do too, and I was really surprised with that, because when the regular like DSi XLs came out, I had no desire to have one. Like, literally zero desire.
Same here.
I thought Josh's was super cool and everything, but I was like, I'm never going to have one of those giant systems ever.
Yep. And as it turns out, now we both have them, and I honestly don't know how I was playing these before I got one of the XLs. I mean, it's you know, you can still sense some minor graphical issues that are going to happen with, you know, the resolution staying the same, but besides that, playing on the larger screens is just so much nicer to be able to play any game that you're playing on this.
It's really, really awesome. And, like, it's not, I thought it was going to be too heavy for me because I have, like, stupid little itty bitty hands, but it's not too heavy, and it's just, oh, it's so pretty.
It is. And they're going to be awesome when we bring them to regionals. I'm kind of curious as to know how many people are going to be there with the Pikachu 3DS XLs.
Probably quite a few, honestly. Like, I would be surprised at, you know, if there weren't very many, like if we were a rarity, that would be sort of odd. But, you know, I'm also really looking forward to this regional tournament, just not because there's going to be so many people wandering around with the 3DSs.
Oh, yeah.
So many street passes.
This is the first time that we would have ever even been in a situation where we would have had a lot of street passes. I mean, we were at CoreCon that one time, and that was great and all, but, you know, we only got maybe 30 at a time, you know, and that, to us, that was a lot. But to Scott in particular, he was just like, oh, 30, you know, that's okay, I guess. But I went to the Legend of Zelda concert, and I got 1,000 spot passes, and we were just like, Scott, just give us the pieces, and that's all we need to know. But now we will have all of the pieces, so.
Oh, it's going to be awesome. I'm going to have to make sure that, like, I finish up a Find Me session before we go, because I'll be mad if, like, I'm, like, on the last guy and I waste all my me people.
Well, then what you should do is, if you want to look up, I'm sure they have some kind of guide for it on the internet, but if you look it up and you know what's going on, you should talk to me and post on the Facebook page for League what you might need for people that are going to be wandering around in there, and we should all just pool our resources together and not start up our Pokemon games right away and just spot pass with each other and get all of our big level 7 guys out there to just start swinging swords and destroying monsters.
Yeah, that's true. I'm so excited to go to regionals. I've been prepping. I've got, like, all my clothes and stuff picked out because I'm a girl and I'm really excited to wear all of my Pokemon shirts ever, including the new Pokemon shirts.
Yes, the new Pokemon shirts. I am so happy that you guys got that for me. I mean,
the Dark Side of the Moon shirts showed up, and they took forever to get here, like 3 weeks.
Really? It was 3 weeks?
Yeah, it was an abnormally long amount of time for a T-Fury shirt to get in. Normally they come in a lot faster, but they had made an announcement that they were having issues with their supplier because their supplier wasn't able to keep up with the demand in certain colors.
Gotcha.
And so we were waiting and waiting and waiting, and then they finally came, and they're so pretty.
They are very pretty.
We got a lot of compliments this last week while we were wearing them. And it's kind of funny because we're sort of like twinsies. We're running around in our exact same t-shirts with our exact same 3DS XLs. It's like, oh, this is almost weird.
Almost weird. Almost.
Oh, man. That's literally all I have for this week. Have you been up to anything other than TCG and regionals prep?
Well, technically it's regionals prep. I've got everything that I will foreseeably need right now. I'm just mostly building up my supply again. I've been growing a bunch of berries in the Dream World that are the competitive berries, the ones that reduce the amount of damage that you take, the, you know, ups such and such a stat in a pinch, those kind of berries. And I just planted, I think I've got up to 6 rows now. I've got one of each of the elemental resistance berries, and the Mickleberry, the Jaboka berry, and one other one. I think it was a Custup berry, and all of those things are going to keep all of my Dream World partners so happy, because they take forever to grow. They run through water really quick. They're going to have just a fantastic time going there and watering all of the things. And they do take a long time. I mean, I grew a couple of berry plants there that were the elemental resistance berries, and those things took about 5 days to reach maturity.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. So I'm glad that I wasn't in dire need of them. It wasn't like it was my only one, and then I had to plant it and I had to wait it out and let it, you know, develop, and then I could get them. I did have some spares. I just wanted to grow more of them, so I didn't pull all of them and then I'm out. So
yeah, I can see how that makes sense.
So yeah, I'm getting the berries that I'm going to need for regionals, and they take quite a while, but I've got, what, 7 days now, so I'll have them ready by Thursday.
And yeah,
everything will be good. I just need to get all of my breeding done.
Oh, I'm getting so nervous.
Yeah, I don't know. If worse comes to worse, I still have the TCG that I can participate in theory, but I'm working really, really hard on this. It's just, I don't know. Some of these Pokemon are just being obstinate about how they are going to work.
Punch them. Punch them in their Pokemon-y faces.
I might.
All right, well, let's stop talking about regionals so we can have a chance to breathe for a second. Head over to the news desk. All right, stopping down in the news desk. Starting off, as always, now we'll be getting through our underground announcements. First up is the fact that there will be no episode 45 until the week of April 20th, because we are going to the Upper Midwest Spring Regional Pokemon Tournament, as you should have realized by now. So Sam and I will not be recording next week, because Friday we'll be driving to Madison, Saturday we'll be participating in tournaments, Sunday we'll be participating in tournaments, and then driving back here, and then Monday I have to go back to school.
Indeed.
So, yay!
It'll be awesome, though. It will be.
I'm going to be so tired for school on Monday. My teachers are going to be like, Atiel, what are you doing? Did you have like a big party weekend? I'll be like, no, I drove to Madison, Wisconsin to play Pokemon for 2 days. Worth it.
Yes. We also had some options come in from all of the Twitter, and here are the choices that we have for you, the listeners, to vote on for this month's Double Team segment. They were Porygon Z, Vanillix, and Taurus.
This was the first time that we actually had more than 3 options come in, and we had to choose the first 3 that came in.
Yep.
Which was kind of fun. So, Poryz, Vanillix, or Taurus. You can choose your Pokemon Poison Pleasure by sending your vote in the form of an email to theundergroundmailbag@gmail.com, like always, or via Twitter at HotPinkJoystick for me, or at AlexielSolarin for Sam.
Indeed.
All right, news for the rest of the Pokemon world. Dream World stuff, yay!
Indeed. We had some new Pokédolls come out, and there were some smatterings here and there that were added in as part of the regular catalog updates. You still have to provide berries for them. But 2 that were specifically given out with a password in the promotion section of the Global Link were Ho-Oh and Lugia. And the password came in the mailbox of everyone with a Pokemon.com account, and you need one of those to be able to use the Pokemon Global link. But if you don't want to look or you can't check for some reason, the password is GOTS GOTS. So it sounds
like GOTS.
GOTS GOTS.
Yeah, it's actually kind of fun.
Yeah.
There has actually been a new house in the Dream World that's been announced for Japanese players. It's not officially announced for international players yet, but we can, you know, kind of hope that something as large as a new Dream World house will eventually make its way over here. It's actually based on the home of the Black and White 2 protagonist, which is kind of cool.
I've seen a couple of my Dream Pals with that house from Japan, and it does look pretty awesome from the outside. We've also had some announcements for national tournaments that are going to be going on in Europe, and it's really kind of weird to see this go on because in the United States, you know, we only have the one national tournament, but of course over in Europe with so many nations in one continent, you know, it's one of those kind of things where they have actually three of them going on in the months of May and the very start of June.
Yep.
The first of these national championship tournaments will be held in Italy. It'll be held at the Mediolanum Forum in Milan, and that'll be from May 11th through the 12th. The second of these will be held in Germany. It'll be held at the Ruhr Congress Bochum in Bochum, Germany, and that'll be May 25th to the 26th. I apologize to anybody who may have heard me murder that German. I don't speak German, so...
No German, only Spanish.
Indeed. And then we also have the last one being in the United Kingdom. That'll be held at the NEC in Birmingham, and that'll be June 1st to the 2nd.
So if you're hanging out, if you're one of our international listeners, which we don't have very many of, but, you know, we like to throw out the info for you as well. If you're anywhere close to one of those, it might be worth your while to get set to make your own little trip to your national tournaments.
Indeed.
European players are also finally getting around to getting the Global Link DLC for the Meloetta Sea Gear skin and musical show. And for European players, this is available until May now, which, you know, there's kind of a little bit of a delay there for the European crowd. We had that a few weeks ago.
I know, right?
So, but it's finally gotten over to Europe, so now everybody in the world now should have access to those particular items, the Sea Gear skin and the musical for Meloetta.
Yep. We have some kind of big news for people who are playing the Pokemon Mystery Dungeon Gates to Infinity. There were some new passwords that were released through Nintendo of Canada, and these passwords unlock various things in the game, and, you know, it's sort of in the same vein as the passwords from Pokemon Conquest.
Yeah.
Yes. And there was also some new DLC that was available to our North American players. And I think the first DLC was a free to download thing, right?
Yeah, it was free for the first little bit for people that bought Pokemon Mystery Dungeon, but now it's available for they're around $2 a pop now.
Yep, there was one for $2.50, and then I think one was $3.50. And the $3.50 one actually looked like it was pretty intense, because it was like some kind of ridiculous 99-level dungeon.
Oh, snap.
Yeah, so that'll be pretty intense for people who have the game.
It kind of makes me want to buy the game, almost.
Almost.
Almost. So players who participated in the March 2013 International Challenge are now able to receive the special prize that they qualified for, the Roap Berry.
Yep, and you can just pick it up in the usual promotions page. I mean, it's there if you got it. And, you know, the Roap Berry is a pretty fun berry to have. I had one back in, I think it was fourth gen, and... I didn't use it all that often, but it was still a fun little thing to have. And for those of you who do have it and you are thinking about planning it, be sure to put a bunch of those on your share shelves if you have them, because I'm sure everybody and everyone will want them.
True story. The last bit of news that we're going to talk about, we're just going to mention really quickly in passing because we've got an entire segment devoted to it later on in the show. And that is the big news that I'm sure that everyone is talking about, and it is the weird new Pokemon that was revealed on this week's episode of Pokemon Smash over in Japan.
It's actually a new Mewtwo form. They released some video of it. They released images, you know, pictures. They've got them all over CeraVe and Bulbapedia. You know, everybody knows all about this. They're translating all this stuff now. You know, the video shows him fighting against a variety of foes, including a Genesect. So, you know, you can always keep yourself informed by checking that out. And I know that they hailed it earlier as this new Pokemon with a familiar look, but like I think it was Bulbapedia, they said that they did the same thing with the Black Kyurem and White Kyurem forms, where it's still Kyurem, but they build them as new Pokemon.
Yeah, so while there hasn't been like an official connection yet to Mewtwo, it's kind of obvious.
It's pretty obvious that it's related to Frieza, not to Mewtwo. I'm sorry.
We've got a whole segment devoted to this later.
Yeah. All right.
All right. So,
yeah, that's news.
Sweet. Okay, let's head over to this week's main topic. Well, with regionals coming up, Sam and I have been thinking almost about almost nothing but doubles format battling. And we've actually gotten a couple of listener emails related to the topic of doubles, of the doubles format as well. So we decided that we would dedicate this entire main topic to competing in the doubles style. The letter that sort of like really kickstarted this was a email that we got from Matt. And he wrote in saying, "Hi, Sam and Atiel. Just thought I would send an email. I want to get into competitive Pokemon battling, but I need some help on how to build doubles teams. Since both of you have been building your doubles teams for the official tournament you're going to, I thought you might be able to give me some pointers on how to build a doubles team. Any help would be great."
And, you know, we're totally willing to give any sort of help that we can, you know, bearing in mind that we're still pretty new to this and we've been learning really from our old league leader, Josh, who's been a fantastic teacher, by the way.
True story.
So, you know, we'll kind of bring you up to speed on what we know. I know there are a number of other really amazing sites that talk about doubles strategy in depth. It doesn't really pop up too often, but Smogon does have its own dedicated, you know, VGC analyst panel or whatever that they write articles on. And another really big source that I've been referred to many times by Josh was Nugget Bridge. They're also just hardcore about the competitive aspect of official VGC 2013, you know, and into the future doubles battling. They write all kinds of incredibly informative articles about it. Those two places would be a fantastic place to start off of the cursory knowledge that we're about to give.
Yeah, Nugget Bridge is actually so cool because, like, I didn't even know that it existed until we started getting into these, until we started getting into researching for our doubles teams, because it's one of those websites that just, unless you know it's there, it's hard to find. Because it gets overshadowed by things like Smogon and CeraVe and all of these other things.
Well, what's unique about that website, though, is that it caters to such a very specific audience.
Oh, and it's totally
And
worth it.
it is worth it, but it is one of those things, like you said, that if you're not looking to be hardcore competing in these tournaments that you go to for regionals, nationals, even worlds, you're going to skip over it because, Serebii and Smogon are like the beginner resources. Serebii has a lot of information on its site, but it doesn't really talk about battling all that much. That's mostly user talk on the forums. Smogon does a whole lot more talking about battling, but there's only so much information that you can glean from it. But Nugget Bridge, they talk about and have on regularly on regular staff writers who go to places like the World's Tournament. They analyze all these teams that all of these, best of the best in the nation and the world, their teams, they analyze them. They, show how to build some of these teams. They make predictions on what'll be hot for the next season cycle. I mean, they are, without a doubt, probably one of the authorities, unofficial authorities anyway, on double battling.
100% yes, true. But
So I think that leads us into the first thing, which is, trying to compare your singles to doubles.
which is to say you can't.
Exactly.
They are completely different worlds, and if you go into a doubles battle thinking that the strategies that you work with in singles formats are going to carry over at all, you're going to have a really bad time.
Oh yeah. When it comes to singles, it's remarkably easy to predict what an opponent is going to do. I mean, you've only got the two Pokemon out there, yours and your opponent's. You know what kind of attacks are going to be coming in. Your opponent knows what kind of attacks he's going to be able to execute. And based on your knowledge, I mean, there's only so many things that really viably work in a single setting. You're able to predict very easily what your opponent is going to do, what your opponent is going to do next, and you're able to switch and you're able to do things in a remarkably easy way. And a lot of more attacks are more viable in singles than they are in doubles.
Well, yeah, and then on top of that, the singles format has existed for so much longer. And so the body of research that's out there on singles battling is so much more massive and in depth. There are singles articles for every single Pokemon in existence.
And in the case of Smogon, even every single generation.
Exactly. So this is something like singles have been around for forever. And it's what we're used to battling in. When we're battling in the game, we're always battling in singles. I mean, it's very rare to even find in a Pokemon game in the story mode a battle where you're doing doubles or triples or rotation or something else. They're much less common. And so we just don't have the experience as Pokemon trainers to work with that kind of stuff.
Exactly.
So there's some things that you really need to be aware of when you go into a doubles tournament, when you're building your doubles team. And I think the first thing that I want to talk about is the idea of synergy.
Oh, yeah.
Because team synergy is important on a singles team, but it is vital on a doubles team. With singles teams, like Sam and I have talked about this before, like we have a lot of Pokemon bred up that we've built for single teams. And if like if I feel like doing something kind of weird on a singles team, like if I'm doing my Elite Four challenge and I feel like doing something kind of crazy, I can throw whatever six Pokemon I have that I want to mess with together, and they usually work out okay.
When it comes to singles, it's very easy to swap out Pokemon based on what you need for that particular fight that you're about to get into. I mean, when it comes to singles, it's very easy to just pick and swap out which Pokemon you're going to need based on, what kind of team you're going to want to run. It's because the amount of thought, I would say, that goes into a singles team is primarily centered around having defense, having offense, and maybe some support in there. And then you're able to predict pretty easily what's going to happen once you're actually out there.
Yeah, and the same does not hold true for a doubles team. When you build a doubles team, you can't just sub out a Pokemon here and a Pokemon there based on, you know, whatever you feel like doing. A doubles team has to have synergy that is so tight that these Pokemon work together and almost work together exclusively.
Yep. There, when you're building a doubles team, one of the ideas that Josh told me, and I thought it was a really good way to describe it, is when you are building your team, you want to have your core of four Pokemon that you know are absolutely going to work together on your team 90% of the time. 90% of the battles you get into with that team, you're going to be using those four Pokemon. And the two Pokemon that you have else on the side there are basically your sideboard, and those are going to be the Pokemon that you bring in that you swap your core out for one, two, whether it's one or both of them, based on the needs that you're going to have. If you're going to run into a team that will absolutely decimate your core, swap out for some of the Pokemon that you know are going to be able to handle the threat that you see coming.
Indeed.
And, you know, another thing, too, with this in the doubles setting, I guess, when it comes to synergy is when you're building a singles team, it's very easy to set IV or EVs for these Pokemon. Usually when you're doing singles, you've got a very basic sort of EV set that works out really well. Most singles Pokemon will use the 252-252-4 spread, which is maxing out two stats and then putting your leftover point in another stat you feel is where it's going to be most needed. And that'll help you out really well. It's a really nice way to work around it. There will be some variance. I mean, I have some Pokemon I know I have a Dragonite somewhere that's running investment in, I think it's like 180 in HP, and then the rest is split into defense and attack or something. I mean, it's a really odd Dragonite to work with, but when it comes to double battles, the precision that you have to control with these Pokemon is to the extreme. I mean, you're basically looking out for any threats that will be in the Pokemon speed tier, in the Pokemon, you know, Pokemon that you predict to see out there, you know, your defensive Pokemon. You're going to want to very tightly control how the EVs are assigned to your Pokemon based on what you need them to do in the team.
And it really can be a little bit overwhelming when you start really, like, getting into those teeny tiny little differences of, you know, whether or not 100 EVs is going to let you be able to knock out one of your biggest threats with a 97 to 107% HP, or if you have to invest 128 to make that full, like, 105 to 115% guarantee.
And even when it comes to speed, too, if you're running Pokemon, say, in like a Swift Swim Pokemon, and you need it to outrun very specific threats, you're going to want to count out to what degree you want that Pokemon to be able to outspeed other Pokemon, because you're going to want to invest the rest of those EVs into something else. I mean, you don't want to, you know, running a Swift Swim Pokemon with max speed investment and then max attack investment sounds really good on paper. It really does. But there are so many other support moves floating around in the doubles environment that you want to be able to micromanage how you're going to be assigning speed and how you're going to be assigning your defensive capabilities along with your offense.
Absolutely true.
Now, one of the hardest things that it came down for me to learn, and One of the things that was very, very difficult for me to learn, and, you know, despite all the tutelage that Josh has been giving me, and it's probably ended up the same way for Nateel. I know she was talking about that when we were in our practice session the other day, and that is knowing when to use Protect and putting Protect on most, if not all, of the Pokemon on your team.
I struggled with this so hardcore. Like, when I started building this team, I didn't have Protect on any of my Pokemon. And Josh was like, Nateel, you have to have Protect on almost every single one of these Pokemon. Everyone. And I was like, but why? Why would I? What on earth am I going to do with Protect? I need to be hitting hard and hitting fast. And he was like, no, Nateel, you need to have Protect. And I was just kind of like, psh, whatever. And so I started battling on Showdown. Everybody uses Protect. Everybody in doubles formats uses Protect, and it creates this entire sub-level of prediction that is impossible for me to get my head around.
I've been able to get around it a little more, but the basic idea when it comes to protecting in doubles is that you've got two Pokemon out on both sides of the field, and what those Pokemon can do if they sense a very real threat to their team is they can either double up on a Pokemon, they can fire two attacks at one Pokemon, which absolutely decimates most defensive Pokemon. I mean, Hydration Vaporeon would absolutely not survive in a doubles format battle because it just would take so much damage so quickly. It wouldn't be able to recover from what it was going through. And with the prevalence of moves like Will-O-Wisp and Thunder Wave and so many status moves that are going around out there, Spore, it's really, really, really important to be able to have Protect on your Pokemon so that if you see this coming, you don't just sit there and think, well, I know that's coming. Now I can't do anything about it.
That's exactly it. Like, I've really found the whole Protect thing to be an issue with my Amoongus because obviously I'm running Spore. And when I see a Pokemon that I want to put to sleep, I'm just like, yeah, I'm going to Spore it. And then it gets protected and then Amoongus is like, oh no.
That's exactly what I did to you the last time that we battled on Showdown.
I was so mad.
I knew exactly what that Fungus was going to do because I've been playing a lot of them. It's a very popular Pokemon for very good reason.
Right.
And, you know, so it's kind of one of those things where, like Nateel said, it adds this whole new depth of prediction to it because not only do you have to predict when you are going to be using Protect, but you also have to predict if the opponent is going to be using Protect. And then you have to think about, well, is he going to not protect, thinking that he will protect? And
there's a feedback loop, and I don't like it.
Yeah, there is an incredible depth to the protect prediction problem,
and that's really only something that you can start to get with experience.
Yes.
I mean, it's one of those things where, like, Sam and I can talk about, you know, instances in which we've accurately predicted an opponent being using Protect or, you know, misleading our opponent into not utilizing Protect in a situation where they should have. But it's really something that you just can't do unless you just get out there and start to figure it out. It's something that just has to click for you.
Yep. Speaking of prediction, though, switching out
in doubles is risky business.
It's risky business, but that is why you plan out these teams well in advance before you do anything with them like this. And there are some really good instances when you're switching out to take a blow that you know you're going to resist, or take a blow that you know you're going to be immune to and actually power yourself up into. And when it comes to these sort of things, there are two really, really, really good examples that I can think of, and it was both one of my battles and one of Josh's battles. in one of Josh's battles, he noticed that I was running a lot of Pokemon that had most likely water-type moves on them. Because, you know, water-type, you know, getting the stab off of it in the rain, it's just kind of a no-brainer. He pulls out a Gastrodon in the... He switches out one of his Pokemon, I think it was... Oh, it was a Togekiss, I think. Switched into Gastrodon. All of a sudden, the two Hydro Pumps that I was going to be targeting a, I think it was a Cradilly with, all of a sudden got sucked right into the Gastrodon because of Storm Drain.
Ouch.
And all of a sudden, Gastrodon had a x2 modifier to its special attack. And that hurt a lot to get hit from. A lot, a lot.
That would be awful.
It was awful. It really was. I was not very happy about that particular battle. But and it was really difficult to get him to switch that thing out, too, because he knew he had good type coverage, and he knew that he wasn't going to be going anywhere because I had no grass Pokemon.
Mm.
So, but another time that I managed to get lucky with a switch in was he was using a Conkeldurr. And he was targeting one of my Pokemon that had rock typing, so it was going to get absolutely murdered by that Mach Punch or by the Drain Punch or something. So I had switched in my Dragonite, which was totally a flying type. And once that Mach Punch hit me, it only took away maybe 2% of my HP, maybe 5. And at that point, Josh knew that that was trouble right away because he knew he wasn't going to be faster than my Dragonite. And my Dragonite immediately, the next turn, hurricaned for a one-hit KO.
Yeah, it's these types of situations that, you know, are you know, fairly common in the doubles format. But you do have to remember that switching out is not always the right choice. Your opponent can be setting up to, you know, double up on their attack on one Pokemon, and if you switch out a Pokemon that's, you know, 3/4 of the way down its HP into something that's got full HP, and your foe is doubled up, you're likely going to get 2-hit KO'd and then completely lose that link in your team without even getting to do anything with it.
Exactly.
So switching out is sort of a at-your-own-risk kind of deal in doubles format because it's so unpredictable for you to be like, well, is my opponent going to double up on this Pokemon? Am I going to get, you know, 2 status conditions thrown at me? It throws a wrench into it. It's not like switching out in singles where it's like, oh, there's a Jolteon right there. I should probably not leave my Politoed out. Maybe we'll throw out this Gastrodon. It doesn't work like that in doubles.
One big thing, too, that I think we should talk about, and it's because there are so many of them out there in the doubles format now, are status moves.
There are so many of them.
And, you know, taking out all of the usual suspects, you know, Spore is super popular in singles, so is Will-O-Wisp, so is Thunder Wave. Taking out all the usual guys out there, there are some really good ones out there that can only work in multi-battles that people make fantastic use of. And one of the biggest ones out there nowadays is the Follow Me or Rage Powder combination.
Yup. I love me my Rage Powder.
And it's a very dastardly attack because it draws all of the attention away from your partner so that all attacks focus on the person who use on the Pokemon that use Rage Powder or Follow Me. And usually those Pokemon are incredibly, incredibly bulky. So they can take the hit and they can allow their partner to freely do whatever they want. And that can hurt a lot in the long run, especially if you're running if you're going to be throwing out Leech Seeds. That all of a sudden throws a massive wrench into what's going on. Or you could totally draw your attention away, and you could have an Abomasnow all of a sudden wood hammer onto a Pokemon that's weak to grass, and then it's automatically taken out of the running. You've taken out a major concern for your team, and you're good to go. I mean, and Tailwind is another big one, because it's a one-turn attack that increases the speed of all of your Pokemon that are on your side of the field, and they are going to just absolutely destroy the other team if they're not careful.
Yeah, there's a lot of these sort of, like, status move dealios, and the thing with, like, Rage Powder and Follow Me is that they outspeed every priority attack except for Fake Out.
Yep.
Fake Out still wins. And Fake Out is, like, the ultimate demise for me.
And it's really unfortunate for you, because I was doing research on this, and I ran into so many of the Fungus or the Togekiss that use Follow Me that I had to have a Fake Out user on there. And it's every time that I see a Togekiss or a Fungus, I automatically think Fake Out, because it's either going to have the Follow Me or the Rage Powder, because so many people use it, and for such good reason.
Yeah, and it's something where, like, I don't see it as often in, like, my normal battles on Showdown, but I know every time I fight you, I've got an uphill battle there. But it's we're working on it. We're working on it.
Yep, and, you know, it's kind of the sad thing that I haven't had the opportunity to really get you in on as many practice sessions as I've had with Josh. Because, I mean, the practice that I've had with Josh has been fantastic for me to kind of pick up how things are going. And you've just been having a whole lot of problems with Showdown, with it being laggy and things like that.
It was so awful last night, I thought I was going to just shoot Showdown in the face.
Yep.
I was not happy. But to sort of wrap up this doubles team main topic, we actually have a sample doubles team from Josh, who wrote in with this, like, for a team building exercise. And so we thought it would be good to, like, give you guys, like, a look at what it's like to sort of build a doubles team.
Indeed.
And so he wrote in saying that his team is incomplete, and he won't be giving all of the details of each Pokemon, since it has the potential to be a tournament team for him. But he is missing a Pokemon and wonders what we or the listeners think that he could use in the opening.
Yep, and the first Pokemon that he has is a Togekiss with the Citrus Berry. It'll be Calm with EVs in HP and Special Defense, not maxed, and with a double spread. The attacks it will have are Air Slash, Tailwind, Follow Me, again, you know, another very common status move to have. And he had a really interesting set here for his last move set. He had a potential of four different ones: Roost, Thunder Wave, Heat Wave, or Protect.
He was following that up with Heatran, who was planning on using the leftovers. It's going to be a modest Heatran running a defensive EV spread with the specific goal to survive a Hitmontop close combat. He is planning to utilize Heat Wave, Earth Power, Hidden Power Grass, Base Power 70, and Protect.
The next Pokemon he was going to be following that up with was a Gastrodon with the Rindoberry to protect against all of the weakness to grass type attacks ever. He was going to have a Bold Nature with defensive EVs, and he was going to have the attacks Muddy Water, Earth Power, Recover, and either Protect or Ice Beam.
Next up, he has a Terrakion with the Choice Band, which he isn't completely sure on yet. He's thinking Choice Band, but he's open to potential suggestions there as well. The Terrakion is going to be running Adamant with an Attack and Speed EV spread, and he wants it to be using Close Combat, Rock Slide, Protect, and then Taunt, Earthquake, or X-Scissor, because it has no other way to deal with Psychic and Dark types.
The last Pokemon he has for us is Thundurus, and he wrote in, that's all the info you get for him. So, that being said, taking a look at this so far, I would say that a really good way to start out with this would probably be with Togekiss and Terrakion.
I can see that. Terrakion would get off either a close combat or a rock slide for some severe like super coverage. Follow Me and Tailwind on Togekiss make me kind of nervous.
I think it's brilliant because what he can do is he can use Follow Me right away, and as long as the Pokemon, as long as his Pokemon that he's fighting don't have Fake Out right away, he can Follow Me and protect Terrakion. Terrakion can use one of his three primary attacks there, depending on what kind of item he has. Maybe lock in. Maybe he'll get locked into one or the other. With Terrakion's incredible base attack and an adamant nature, it's almost guaranteed to get one of those, if not a one-hit KO right away, a very close knockout. And then the very next turn, he can Tailwind with Togekiss, and then the Terrakion can use the other attack there to just smash whatever else is left on the field.
I think it works. I just, like, I don't know. Does Togekiss have the bulk to survive, the two hits that it's going to take on the Follow Me?
Oh, absolutely. What's really awesome about this Togekiss too is that it has the citrus berry.
Oh, that's
So
right. That's right. I'd forgotten.
even after it's taken the damage, it'll have the citrus berry and recover its HP. And that's also assuming that the opponent knows that the Follow Me is going to be coming. I mean, if you predict wrong and you're going to say an air slash, or he's going to be a sub paralyze Pokemon Thunder Wave and substitute, and you're able to attack that way. As long as you've got the prediction on your side, that Togekiss can be really, really good. And with the investments in HP and special defense, along with that calm nature, he's going to be able to soak a number of attacks. I've attacked Josh's Togekiss that he's had on his practice teams before with attacks like Ice Beam, and it barely did enough to do maybe 40% damage.
Nice.
So yeah, I think that's a really nice way to start out. And depending on what you need, I mean, if you see a lot of water type Pokemon or even a fire type Pokemon on there, you can always switch in Heatran, who will have Flash Fire, or Gastrodon, who will most likely have Storm Drain.
I would hope he was running a Storm Dream Gastrodon.
I would be too. It would be a little awkward if he was running a Sticky Hold one.
Sticky hold. Not four doubles.
Indeed.
Do you have any suggestions for the last Pokemon slot on his team? Because I don't know. It's so hard to shove one more Pokemon into these things.
Well, he's got two special attackers. He has two status Pokemon. I would technically say Thundurus would be a status one because he's got the Prankster ability, so he's able to launch off that priority Thunder Wave, can shoot off, powerful electric attacks. It's just a nice Pokemon to have out there to be able to deal with faster opponents that much better. Just looking this over, I might consider a grass type Pokemon, or maybe a what is the type I'm thinking of? I might even consider a dragon type Pokemon.
Dragon types are good stuff.
Well, not only that, but they're also part flying type too. And with this setup, there isn't a whole lot of fear from any ice type attacks that are coming in. So, in theory, you could possibly pop in a Dragonite, maybe a Salamence, and you could even have a mixed one, and you could probably start going to town with that one. And especially if you've picked out the Salamence, it does have the ability Intimidate, and that would reduce the damage that the Togekiss, the Heatran, the Terrakion and the Gastrodon would all take from physical attacks.
I think a Salamence would be a really good option, honestly. Intimidate is fantastic in doubles teams.
Or, you know, because Josh is Josh, you could always run Scrafty, too. I mean, Scrafty does get Intimidate as a Dreamworld ability, so...
That's true. That's
you know,
true.
And Dark-type Pokemon are his thing, so... I mean, there you go.
Well, those are our suggestions. If you guys have any suggestions for Josh, you could respond to his team here by sending an email to theundergroundmailbag@gmail.com, and we'll sort of update when we do our next episode, as well as maybe giving you guys a look at the teams that Sam and I took to the regional tournament. Well, we're stopping in to take a little peek at the voltage meter, which has gone up slightly. We had a review come in from DMAC382, who said that we are one of the better Pokemon casts out there. He gave us 4 out of 5 stars and said, "Many interesting topics that don't come up in other podcasts. Not afraid to get their hands dirty or say things how they are. Though I find the episodes are often very specific and feel scripted, this also means that misinformation isn't as likely. Rumors are clearly noted as rumors, with little room for error. Again, certainly one of the better Pokemon-themed podcasts out there, and certainly growing from when I first started digging the underground." Well, it is time for another edition of Stunfisk Used Fly, in which Sam and I will be discussing when something in the Pokemon world has really bedoofed it up. And this week we are talking about, quote-unquote, Mew 3.
Yeah, and as everybody is probably well aware of by now, the Mew 3 is an official second form to Mewtwo. You know, that's not its official name.
That's just sort of what we're calling it.
But I don't know. Mew 3, it seems like... I don't know, when I first saw it, I instantly thought that this was a bad idea. Because I don't know how you can possibly improve on a Pokemon like Mew 2 without making it so absurdly overpowered that it just destroys everything.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know if it's going to be, like, an alternate form or what it's going to be happening. But I don't know that I like the idea of Mewtwo having an alternate form in the first place. Like, Mewtwo has this fantastic lore associated with him from the first generation. He has been unchanged since Gen 1. And it's like, oh, well, now we're going into Gen 6 and weird stuff is happening with the Pokemon that I know and love. He's got a really good backstory from the first Pokemon movie, which is, by the way, my favorite Pokemon movie.
Yeah, and I don't know, Mewtwo getting a second form, just... I don't know why you would do it, other than just not being able to produce enough original Pokemon to fill in the next 100, you know, 20 odd Pokemon that are going to be coming out in Gen 6.
Oh, gross.
But I don't know. It just seems like such a waste of potential for a brand new Pokemon. And
it looks weird.
It does look weird. Like I said earlier, it looks more like Frieza from Dragon Ball Z than it does Mewtwo.
It's got, like, I don't like how in the video that they've shown, like, its, like, head tail thing is, like, super wiggly, like a tentacle.
Yeah.
It's creepy, and I'm trying to not be that Pokemon fan that gets all, like, super ragey about all of the Pokemon things ever, but especially since we don't have a whole lot of information on what this is or what it's doing, so...
Yeah. To me, it seems like it sets a bad precedent, because when Black and White 2 came out, and we first saw Black Kyurem and White Kyurem. It was originally hailed as a new Pokemon, even though it was an alternate form. And what happened that made me very nervous about it was the Black Kyurem and White Kyurem both got massive boosts to their HP and to their physical or special offense, respectively. And I'm worried that that Pokemon is starting to move into the same sort of thing that they've done with the TCG and the Pokemon EX cards, where it's this gradual power creep among the legendary Pokemon that they're releasing.
I don't want the video game to start becoming a power creep thing. And it's starting to get a little bit nerve-wracking because it seems to me like the games are coming out more frequently than they used to.
Well, when did... Well, Black and White 2, those came out in, what, March of 2012?
Yes.
So it would be 18 months?
Maybe it's not as long as I think it is. I don't know. Maybe I'm just getting old.
Maybe, but I don't know. It seems... I do agree with you there. It's... You know, I like the promise that of what X and Y have to bring, but I'm worried that they might be losing sight of the sheer competitiveness of it by providing for people these ridiculously powerful legendary Pokemon. And, you know, even from a competitive standpoint, that Black Kyurem and White Kyurem only had a base 95 speed, so you could theoretically do tremendous damage to them simply by outpacing them. Black Kyurem and White Kyurem both had base attack and special attack of 170, depending on which one you were using. And that's a phenomenal amount of attack power for anyone to have. I mean, that's...
130 is a phenomenal amount of attack power.
Yeah, and Mewtwo himself, just him sitting there, had a base special attack of 154, which was absolutely insane. And I don't know if they're going to change any of his stats with this new form that's coming out, but the precedent is still there that they could increase that attack all the way up to 170, which would just about nuke anything that was going to pop out against it.
Yeah, it's going to be... I don't know. I'm trying to reserve, like, my final judgment until we have more information and things start to become a little clearer and maybe it has a tie-in with the new movie and all that stuff, but... let's just hope it doesn't end up as, like, the biggest Stunfisk-used fly in history. Well, we get to stop in on Victory Road again today for this episode. We've got a few Victory Road stories, one for both Sam and I, as well as one in from a listener. Yay!
The first one that we have is from our listener and very devoted respondee, Silent Omen, who writes in a quick Victory Road story. I was looking to catch a Metang in Giant Chasm. I was playing my hand at a simple RNG attempt and ended up accidentally RNGing a flawless Ditto instead. Most epic accident ever.
I love flawless Dittos. They make breeding so much easier.
They make all things better.
Oh, it is a lot of fun, though.
It is.
So, my Victory Road story is about regionals Pokemon.
Awesome.
Yeah, so I've been breeding, and I'm just going to share one right now because it's so much fun and I was so excited about it. I bred myself a Duskull yesterday that has the IVs of 31, 14, 29, 30, 31, 0.
Very awesome.
I was just like, yeah!
That is the next thing to perfect.
It's so perfect. Like, his, you know, his defense and special attack are like 2 and 1 points away from being absolutely perfect. And so I was kind of like, well, you know, whatever. I think I can make that work.
Oh, yeah, totally.
So when I popped that, and the thing was that it came out so quickly. Like, I think I was breeding for maybe 2 hours.
Wow.
And I got that little baby. Like, Conkeldurr took me quite a bit longer than that, and I don't even want to talk about Amoongus anymore, not on a Victory Road story, but the Duskull popped out so fast, and he was so wonderful, I was just super excited. So that's my Victory Road story. My breeding is finally turning around.
Very awesome. My Victory Road story is along the same lines as Nateel's, and I've been having some pretty good luck with my breeding that I've had going on. In particular, I hatched one of my regionals team members with perfect HP, defense, special attack, and special defense with an attack of 2, which is absolutely unnecessary, and a speed of 23, which is optional on that particular Pokemon. Honestly, it could not have been a better hatch for that particular Pokemon.
I think you win. That's awesome. That's awesome. I'm really excited that we've been having such good luck with breeding these Pokemon because, like Josh was saying a while ago, it's not uncommon at all for these people that go to these regional tournaments to RNG their Pokemon, and we'll be going down with zero RNG'd Pokemon, period.
Yeah, that's some. Well, he said too that there are people who specifically do nothing but RNG Pokemon for other people. So we're going to be playing against Pokemon that these people might not have even RNG'd themselves.
Yeah, so.
So this is going to be pretty awesome. I don't know how well I'm going to do. I'm going to hope I do really well.
I don't even care because we've sunk so much time and effort into these teams, the natural, quote unquote, the natural way, that I think that's something that we can just be proud of in general.
Exactly. Exactly.
You have new mail.
Well, Delibird stopped by again, and we have got some mail to share with everybody. Starting off with, again, Silent Omen wrote in saying, "Hello, amazing people. I regret to inform you that I may be a more silent omen for a while. I'm in the middle of a move and without internet. That said, warning text while incoming. I want to start off with your move-themed segment. Allow me to go, Professor here, Acid Armor. The changing to a more liquid state makes physical contact tricky. You can't really make surface contact with water. It disperses and then submerges whatever makes contact with it. This can be noted by other games making a more liquid-themed monsters easier to defeat with magic over weapons. Simple beam. Many tests show that light and colors have an impact on how we think and feel. Yellow is a cheery color. Note that more people are happier on bright sunny days. If Aurora Beam can confuse, we can allow this same logic here. Horn Leech. I view this similar to Leech Seed. I think it's more of a ram and ensnare, while contact causes the absorbing of energy. Rage Powder. In real-world history, many Celtic and Viking warriors used powders and plant spores and face paints to induce a toxic berserk mentality in battle. Note how mold spores can make you feel tired and irritable. Next, I'll cover the Kanto War Theory. Though plausible, there are men in the game. Sylph-Co, Hikers, Saffron Guards, the SS Anne. I think it has more to do with oversight than a real plot dynamic. I also want to let you guys know that I have all of the available Dreamworld female Pokemon. That includes the rare Lightning Rod Pichu. Anyone ever need a hand, just send me a tweet. Finally, I was so pleased to hear that you are giving Striaton Radio a listen. I'm a regular on the cast, and I pay for the cast host client. Knowing more people are giving us a shot makes me feel my investing is worthwhile. You add inspiration to what we do, and I hope you guys enjoy at least half as much as we enjoy your cast. By the way, Justin got me started digging the underground. I continue to enjoy more of what you do. Also, Stunfisk Use Fly is now an instant fave of mine. Don, a.k.a. Silent Omen."
That's awesome.
It is pretty cool. We're sorry that you won't be able to listen for a while, but, you know, hopefully this week that Sam and I are taking off will be good for you then, because you'll have one less episode to catch up on when you come back to us.
Indeed.
Tee!
The other letter that we got in was from Dario Zulaga, who writes in, "Hey Underground, I know it is late, but I just wanted to say happy birthday. Oddly enough, that was the first episode that I ever listened to, and I thoroughly loved the podcast. The amount of information that you guys pack into a show is outstanding. Not only that, you guys are so organized with your presentation of the podcast. Keep doing what you do. Recently, I have gotten back to the Pokemon games. I have been playing for years, ever since Blue came out for my Game Boy Pocket. Now I have started playing with the idea that I want to get into the competitive side of the game. Your podcast has given me a firm understanding of some of the mechanics and strategies. You take the steep learning curve that this game has and made the climb a little less arduous. And you guys make the journey fun along the way. I listened to you to pass an otherwise long day. At first I was listening to the episodes that I found to be interesting, but now I'm going through the episodes, and let's just say I'm going to leech seed all the knowledge from you that I can. Keep up the good work. And here's to another awesome year. Sorry this took so long. And remember, I dig the underground. Dario Zuluaga.
Well, thank you for writing in, Dario. I think it's super cool that you are really getting into the competitive side of Pokemon, and this is honestly one of the more glowing emails we've ever received. I love the idea that we are making the journey into competitive Pokemon playing a little less terrifying, because I know when I started doing competitive Pokemon training, I was literally just scared out of my mind. I had no idea what I was doing. I had very little, you know, plain language resources at my disposal, so it's nice to hear that we're at least helping out somebody out there.
Oh yeah.
What kind of Pokemon are you? How do you do the things you do? Share with me your secrets deep inside. What kind of Pokemon are you? Are you loyal through and through? And do you have a heart that's true? What kind of Pokemon are you?
Yeah.
This week's Pokemon Spotlight covers number 494, Victini.
Victini is a psychic and fire type Pokemon. He is a legendary Pokemon and is known for having a very small tan body, large red colored ears in the shape of a V, and two wing-like tails.
It's interesting because Victini is unlike any other legendary Pokemon in that it comes at the very beginning of its region's national Pokedex. Victini comes first in the Unova National Pokedex, even before Snivy. And yep. It's got the number 000. It's so weird.
And what's even more bizarre, really, is even when it comes to the National Dex, it still comes before the Snivy, which is absolutely ridiculous. It's kind of one of those things that they've never done before, and I've just been like, well, he's going to be stuck at the end, right? Nope, turns out. No.
Right, and I have no idea why they made that choice. Victini is kind of it's a super cute legendary, honestly, and its big deal is that it is the victory Pokemon. It's said to bring victory to any trainer that befriends it.
And, you know, kind of with good reason, which we'll talk about here in just a second. Victini is said to be found at and to reside on the Liberty Garden in Unova, a small island that you reach by sailing from Castellia City, and it's at the bottom of a lighthouse, and the only way you could find it in-game was to have the blue ticket, which you handed off to one of the sailors on the piers there, and then you were taken right to it.
Yep. As far as, like, the anime is concerned, he's made a major role appearance in the movies White Victini and Reshiram, and then Black Victini and Zekrom, which were, like, the two movies that were almost exactly the same that featured the opposing sides of the black and white legendaries. We haven't gotten to those movies yet, so Sam and I don't really have a whole lot to say on them, but we'll get there someday.
We will. Victini's ability is Victory Star, and this is a pretty unique ability for any Pokemon in general, because it raises the accuracy for its partners and for the user in double and triple battles by 10%.
Which doesn't seem like a whole lot when you think about it, but there are some moves out there with like a 90% accuracy that every once in a while fail at the worst possible moment. I'm looking at you, Rock Slide.
I would even take a 90% accurate Stone Edge.
A 90% accurate Stone Edge would be amazing!
I know, right? So, and that's an ability, too. You don't have to worry about using something like Hone Claws to, or Moody, the ability, to try and increase that accuracy so
randomly.
Yeah, so it's one of those things where if you just pop him out there, he instantly grants that accuracy bonus, which can also help against opponents that also might have the Bright Powder or the ability Sand Veil in a sandstorm.
Stupid Bright Powder. Hate the Bright Powder.
100% the Bright Powder is pretty terrible.
It's like 100% accuracy thunder in the rain. Oh, no, Bright Powder. No! Victini's actually appeared on 8 TCG cards in 3 sets already, despite the fact that it is a 5th generation Pokemon, all of which are obviously currently tournament legal because it's Black and White forward. The Victini EX card actually also has its own Ace Spec card, the Victory Piece. The Victory Piece allows Victini EX to use its attacks regardless of the amount or type of energy that happened to be attached to it.
It's potentially a really powerful card because if you combine it with with the trainer Skyla, you can play Skyla your very first turn, search your deck, find the Ace Spec Victory Piece, attach it right to Victini EX, and then you're able to use its most powerful attack right on turn one.
Which is awesome!
It is.
In the video game, Victini is actually a pretty powerful Pokemon, too. It learns a number of powerful fire attacks and is very offensively oriented as far as team roles are concerned.
Yeah, it does have a couple of status moves, but for the most part, it is going to be knocking out really, really powerful fire attacks like Overheat, Searing Shot, and if you so happen to have them, it may know some event moves such as V-Create, Fusion Bolt, and Fusion Flare, and even the ones that were the signature moves of Reshiram, Zekrom, and Kyurem, which were Blue Flare, Bolt Strike, and Glaciate, respectively.
Yep, and the neat thing about Victini is that it's got the exact same base stat spread as Mew. It's base 100s across the board. And so it's got potential to do literally anything you want it to do. It can be a mixed attacker, it can be a special attacker, it can be a physical attacker, it can be speedy, it can be a little bit bulkier, which makes it a really hard Pokemon for your opponent to accurately predict if you're willing to sort of give it a little bit of a, you know, if you're willing to play outside the lines a little.
Yep, and the only unfortunate thing about Victini is that his fire and psychic typing does leave him open to a number of really common attack types, such as ground, rock, water, ghost, and dark.
And water and rock, and ground, rock, and water especially are tough, especially in doubles, which is where Victini shines because of his ability.
Yep.
Because you've got Earthquake out there, Surf, and Rock Slide, which are 3 really huge common moves in the doubles metagame.
Yep. There's very little that a Victini would be able to do against most, especially water and ground type Pokemon.
Yeah.
I mean, there at that point, I mean, you can't really use the ice type or fire type or even especially not the electric type attacks that it might know to try and take it down. So you kind of have to pick and choose when the Victini's going to come out there.
But that doesn't mean he's impossible to use. You've got to go in knowing that he's going to have some really common weaknesses out there on the doubles VG front. And if you really want to use him, you can. You've just got to give him proper support.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Okay, it's time for question of the week. Last week we had asked you guys what your favorite battle strategy is in the Pokemon game, and we had a response come in from a brand new listener who would like to go by Max the Charizard. Max writes in saying, "My favorite battle strategy is to annoy my opponent so much that they lose their prediction skills. Then I finish off with Charizard, Garchomp, Haxorus, or Lucario. To annoy people, I use three different Pokemon. I love throwing my trusty Whimsicott out there and subseeding my opponents until they quit. I especially love tossing Wobbuffet out against a Scarfed Bandit or Specked Pokemon, but perhaps my favorite annoyer of all is Shuckle. Toxic, Sandstorm, Wrap, with the Binding Band, Power Split, and finally Rest. My Shuckle's name, aw shucks. However, I don't always have time for 30-minute Pokemon battles. But when I don't, I grab my Politoed and slap on some Choice Specs to get Hydro Pump coming out from half my team. These battles only take about 5 minutes." And that was the only response that we had for this week's question of the week. It was a tough question of the week, honestly.
It was.
So we've scaled back a little bit, and we're moving from the VG side of the spectrum to the TCG side of the spectrum, because there is a new set coming up called the Megalocannon set.
Yes, and our question of the week to you is, what card are you most excited to see from the upcoming Megalocannon set?
There are some amazing cards coming out.
Yes, there are.
Oh my goodness. So, Sam, you managed to choose just one. I could not.
Yep, and, you know, I did look at most of them, and most of them were pretty good. I opted not to go with the Genesect EX that's coming out, because that thing is just super, just amazingly broken.
Right.
But the one that I look forward most to is the Cradilly. And that Cradilly has a one grass energy attack that allows you to play a stage 2 Pokemon as a basic Pokemon right onto your bench. And that, in and of itself, that is just phenomenal to see.
That's awesome. I chose three cards because I couldn't choose just one. Like, I tried really hard. I think I started off with, like, five that I wanted to talk about, and I narrowed it down to these three.
Okay, which ones were they?
So I'm starting off with the Machamp. And the reason I'm talking about Machamp is because his ability is called Training Evidence, and it says that as long as this Pokemon is in play, not the active Pokemon, but just in play, each of your fighting-type Pokemon's attacks are not affected by resistance.
That could be useful.
Super useful, especially if you've got, like, some hybrid fighting-type Pokemon out there, or if you're utilizing Groudon EX, or...
Yep.
All of these things are good things. The next one that I want to talk about is the Dialga EX.
Ooh.
Yeah. Like, I was kind of like, oh, EX Pokemon, yay, more EX Pokemon. But this Dialga EX makes me so happy. Because it's a Dragon-type Pokemon, and it's a combo Psychic-Steel-type Dragon Pokemon. Its first attack is called Reverse Edge, and it does 50 damage. And it says that it says flip a coin. If heads, put a card from your discard pile into your hand.
Ooh.
Just like, it's like free junk arms. And it does damage at the same time, and you don't have to throw anything away. Oh, the other really crazy thing about Dialga EX is its secondary attack, which requires 4 colorless energy and does 90 damage, but says... it's called Time Progress, and it says, for each plasma energy attached to this Pokemon, discard the top card from your opponent's deck.
Oh, jeez.
So, if you happen to have 4 plasma energies in your deck, and you've left Dialga EX on the bench long enough to load him up with all 4 of them, you're forcing your opponent to discard 4 cards every single turn, while also doing 90 damage.
Yikes.
It's kind of gross.
And that 90 damage doesn't seem like a whole lot, but if you're fighting another deck with Dragon-type EXs in them, that 90 damage turns into 180 really fast, and that's more than enough to knock out, I think, just about any Dragon-type legendary EX Pokemon, except for, I think it's White Kyurem with the Crystal Wall.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Yeah. The last one that I want to talk about is actually a new trainer card that's coming out.
Oh.
Caitlyn.
Oh, that's right. I remembered Caitlyn.
Yeah, yeah. And Caitlyn's card is super cool because what she does is she's a supporter, and she says, put any number of cards from your hand onto the bottom of your deck in any order that you like. Then draw from your deck a number of cards equal to the amount that you put on the bottom.
That could be handy.
Yeah, so it's like, what's the card that Juniper has you discard your hand to draw a new hand?
Yep.
Caitlyn says, I don't have to get rid of these cards. I just stuff them on the bottom of the deck and then draw new cards. Because the next time that you play like a supporter or whatever, you're likely going to shuffle them anyways.
Exactly.
So it's not like they're just staying there on the bottom. I mean, it's highly unlikely that the cards that you put on the bottom will stay on the bottom of your deck for very long.
It's a very, very nice alternative to Juniper, because Juniper can make you discard half your deck really, really quickly. And being able to just shuffle it back in, essentially, and not have to worry about actually shuffling your deck is a fantastic boost, especially to decks that don't rely on things like Colorus.
And the other really awesome thing is that you get to choose how many cards you put onto the bottom of your deck. With Juniper, you're forced to discard your entire hand and draw an entirely new set of cards. With Caitlyn, if you've got one card in your hand that you really need, and then like four or five that you're just not using right now, you can keep the one you need and then drop the four or five that you aren't utilizing and then pull four or five new ones.
Well, there you go.
So, like, I think Caitlyn's going to be a huge card in the next set, and I'm really excited for her. If you guys would like to tell us what your favorite card is from the upcoming set, like which one you're most excited about, why you're super excited for it, coming up from the Megalocannon set, you can do so by sending an email to us at theundergroundmailbag@gmail.com. You can respond on this week's show topic on the D20 Radio Network forums, that's d20radio.com/forums, or you can send them in a tweet to me at @hotpinkjoystick or Sam, who is at Alexiel Solarin. If you enjoyed today's broadcast, you can find back episodes of The Underground on iTunes or at our website, theundergroundpodcast.wordpress.com. Please subscribe to the show via the iTunes Store or directly through the RSS feed on our website. If you like what you hear, leave us a review or a rating on iTunes, and if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, send them with the nearest deli bird to our mailbag, or you can just email us at theundergroundmailbag@gmail.com. We'd also love to hear your bumpers. Just record an MP3 of yourself telling us that you dig the underground and send it in. We'll play it at the top of the next episode. You can also join our discussions over on the D20 Radio forums at d20radio.com/forums.
Please join us again in 2 weeks, as we'll be gone for the Midwest Regional Pokemon Tournament next week, when we'll be giving you a full tournament recap. So, until next time, PokeFans, remember that our secret base is always open to you if you can find it.
The Underground Podcast is protected under a Creative Commons, non-commercial, no derivatives, 3.0 unported license and is intended for entertainment and educational purposes only. Pokemon is a registered trademark of Nintendo, Game Freak, 4Kids Entertainment, and Wizards of the Coast. Music used in the show comes courtesy of the OC Remix album, The Missing Note Tracks. These songs and thousands more can be found at www.ocremix.org. All original audio, textual, graphical, and video content associated with the Underground Podcast are the sole copyright intellectual property of Nikhil Erickson and Samuel Ranke in affiliation with the D20 Radio Network.
And now, for a Pokemon pro tip. Cow tipping is a potentially life-threatening pastime in the Pokemon world. Hashtag that Miltank.